God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Thank you, friends, for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Church. These are perhaps the most confusing times ever. We seem to be on the verge of a cultural meltdown. We have now treated falsehood as truth, and truth, well, truth, we don't even want to talk about it. As we open our program, I want to remind you of our Columbus, Ohio East Coast Prophecy Conference. It is getting closer every day. The date, September the 24th through the 26th. It's at the Embassy Suites Columbus Airport. It's close to the airport and close to the interstate. Billy Crone, Dan Fisher, Derek Gilbert, Carl Gallops, Bill Federer, and several others will be speaking. Dr. Joe Cristiano, David Benoit, Dr. Bob Glaze, and yours truly will be sharing what God has put on our hearts. These are the most confusing times we've ever lived through. Confusing times can be upsetting, but remember what we say every day as we open the program: God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. I always enjoy our conferences. This year will be no different. Top speakers and prophetic thinkers will be providing you with insight and information. Come to Columbus, Ohio, September the 24th through the 26th. For more information, call our toll-free number, 1-800-652-1144. You know, friends, one of the amazing things about America is the role Christianity has played in our founding and in our existence, our laws, our legal system, and the role of pastors and preachers and great revivals all reflect the central role of Christianity in the United States. President Calvin Coolidge said this. He said, "Our government rests upon religion. It is from that source that we derive our reverence for truth and justice, for equality and liberty, and for the rights of mankind. Calling the people to righteousness was a direct preparation for self-government." And Coolidge was right in that. Our guest is Bill Federer. We're talking about his book, Miracles in American History, Volume 2. Thank you, Bill, for being back on the program.
Thank you, Larry.
Let's pick up in Chicago with Moody and just run with that. There's more things that your book reveals, and I think our people need to know about that.
Yeah, so you had Charles Finney, lawyer that becomes a preacher, and his lectures on revival influence George Williams to start the YMCA, Young Men's Christian Association, and his sermons influence William and Catherine Booth to start the Salvation Army. It was originally called the Christian Mission, and it started to rescue girls, underage girls, out of sex trafficking. That's right. They had that in England. And Catherine Booth says, "I felt like I was betraying humanity unless I went into the dens of these wicked people and, you know, preached the gospel to them." And sort of interesting, they actually bought a girl out of the sex trafficking to expose it. Well, the sex traffickers brought their people in the government to sue and prosecute the Booth, saying, "You participated in sex trafficking because you bought this girl." And it ended up becoming front page news in England, this prosecution and so forth. Well, the Booths were cleared, but it brought to the awareness of the country that they passed laws raising the age of consent for sex up the age of 18 there in England. But the Salvation Army ended up spreading to America, to countries all around the world. But it all started with this lectures on revival, that the idea is you don't just concentrate on your own relationship with God. It's a cross, right? You focus on God, but you love God by also loving other people. So Charles Finney started the Oberlin College, which was the station on the Underground Railroad. And so he ended up pushing the abolitionist movement, and his college granted the first degree to a black woman, Mary Jane Patterson. So you had this impact spread. There was one of the young men was Jeremy Lampier, starts this 1857 Layman's Prayer Revival in New York, but then it spreads across the country. And then you have D.L. Moody, who was a shoe salesman in Chicago at the same exact time, now in 1858. He decides to open a Sunday school for inner city kids in an abandoned saloon, and it grows to 1,500 people. Lincoln actually attended. But then he preaches all across the country. P.T. Barnum, Barnum and Bailey Circus, had built a great Roman hippodrome in New York City. But back then, there was nothing going on Sunday. So he let D.L. Moody use his auditorium. When he goes on the road, bankers J.P. Morgan, Cornelius Vanderbilt help D.L. Moody to buy this, and it becomes a revival tabernacle. And then they have 7,000 people in the main hall, 4,000 in the overflow, 500 ushers, 1,200 singers. Sunday attendance was 25,000 people. He went over and preached in England to the Queen and met Charles Spurgeon, preached at his tabernacle, met Hudson Taylor, the missionary to China, and then he's on his way back to America. Now D.L. Moody is older. Their boat, the ocean liner Spree, broke and was drifting out of the channel where all the ships went, so nobody was noticing, and it started taking on water, and it was tilting over. They heard a loud crash, and the boiler busted, and there's no lifeboats, in the rough seas, and they know. And so D.L. Moody gets everyone on deck. They, recite Psalms 91. They pray. And then he writes how the 1894 Chicago World's Fair was coming up, and he was going to skip it because he's an old guy. And he said that he told the Lord that if the Lord spared his life from dying at sea, he would preach it. And lo and behold, it ended up being his biggest event yet. And 150,000 people went through his preaching tent there in Chicago at this Chicago World's Fair. I love some of the quotes from D.L. Moody. He says, the Bible will keep you from sin, or sin will keep you from the Bible. He says, I know the Bible's inspired because it inspires me. And he says, preparation for old age should begin no later than one's teens. A life is empty of purpose until 65 will not suddenly become filled on retirement. And so this idea that, and he says, Moses spent 40 years thinking he was somebody, 40 years learning he's nobody, and 40 years discovering what God can do with a nobody. Now, that's D.L. Moody. Again, these are all stories in the book, Miracles in American History, Volume 2, Amazing Faith to Shape the Nation. Another is Booker T. Washington. 1856, he's born. He's a slave. The war ends. He's freed. He walks 500 miles to the Hampton Institute in Virginia, which was started for freed slaves. And he has teachers that teach him the Bible. One is Miss Natalie Lord. And she teaches, he said, she taught me how to use the Bible, love the Bible. I learned to love to read the Bible, not only for spiritual help, but on its account as a literature. And he says, there's not a day that goes by that I don't read the Bible. Anyway, he goes to Wayland Bible Seminary in Washington, D.C., works at a salt furnace in West Virginia, comes back. He speaks at a graduation service, and he's so good, they hire him. And then they talk about starting a Freeman's College in Alabama, Tuskegee, and they're looking for a president. And they say, well, why don't you get Booker T. Washington? He becomes the first black man to be the president of a university. And he goes down there. He gets a black man who is named Robert Robinson Taylor. He's from MIT. He's an engineer and architect. He designs all the buildings. They cook the bricks on campus, and they build a big chapel and all these buildings. And he recruits George Washington Carver, who comes to Tuskegee. Booker T. Washington meets Andrew Carnegie, the steel industrialist, John D. Rockefeller, the Standard Oil, George Eastman, who invented the Kodak camera, and Sears and Roebuck president, Julius Rosenthal. And they pay and build schools all across America. Not 1 cent from the government. They're privately building these schools for these young black children to go to. And just an amazing impact. So Booker T. Washington is the first black man to have dinner in the White House. He was invited by Republican President Teddy Roosevelt. And he says, every wise man develops friendship with his neighbor, whether he be black or white. And he said that General Armstrong, there at the Hampton Institute, taught him that you love every race. And he said, I will not allow anyone to belittle my soul by making me hate him. And anyway, so then we're talking about the movement of America. in this revival movement. And one of the stories that I love is Billy Sunday. So who's he? So now we're into the D.L. Moody's where? In Chicago. Billy Sunday's what? He's a Chicago White Stockings baseball player. White Stockings, that's before White Sox. And he is recruited to play by A.G. Spalding, the founder of the Spalding Sports Company, right? And so here's Billy Sunday, one of the most popular baseball players in the country. He is at a bar in downtown Chicago, 1886. He comes out and he hears some singing down the street. It's the Pacific Garden Mission. He gets closer and hears some hymns that his mother used to sing to him when he was a little boy. He ends up listening more and more, and the Lord touches his heart. He meets a young girl, Nell, and finds out that she goes to a Jefferson Park Presbyterian church, so he starts going to the church. He wants to date her. The father says no because he says that baseball players are transient ne'er-do-wells who, when they get old, their body wears out, they're misfits and good for nothing. That's back before they paid him a lot of money. But eventually the father relented. They got married, and they were married, 1888. And Billy Sunday said that he never did anything without his wife's approval. He says, never yet gone contrary to Mrs. Sunday's advice. So she organized his preaching services, and he ended up preaching, and they at first wrote about it as a baseball game. They ended up saying, center fielder Billy Sunday made a three-base hit at Farewell Hall last night. There's no other way to express the success of his first appearance as an evangelist in Chicago. The audience was about 500 people. Well, lo and behold, he preaches to 100 million people, right? All the way up to 1935. Radio was just invented, and he pioneers preaching the gospel on radio. Matter of fact, he can't help but turn the power dial up more and more, and it crowds out the baseball radio signal. And so some of the people complain, and that's when the government starts the FCC, Federal Communication Commission, to start regulating the radio stations. But anyway, he ends up carrying on this tradition of revivals across America. And he is one of the – one day he preached in Joplin, Missouri, and the newspaper said 50 days of Sunday, because he preached for 50 days. You know how they set up tents? Well, he was more permanent. He set up wooden buildings. They would go in a year in advance, get everybody to begin praying a year in advance, and they would build this big auditorium that they would later donate to the city. And just an amazing impact. And, of course, Billy Sunday inspired Billy Graham and all of the preaching that took place after that. But amazing, amazing stories. And again, they're all in the book, Miracles in American History, Volume 2.
Well, what strikes me, there are so many things that strike me, but I'm just thinking, this was all non-denominational. Men and women were used, black and white. I'm sure there were some pastors and clergy, but also non-clergy. And it just seems that when the Lord wants to work, he, you know, if somebody knows Jesus Christ as personal Savior, believes the Bible, you don't get into some big theological squabble. You just preach the gospel and watch the Holy Spirit work.
Well, it's so true. I want to throw in one story of Eddie Rickenbacker. He's a race car driver. And he, World War I starts, and he ends up becoming the chauffeur for General John J. Pershing. Now, Pershing had written the foreword to a Bible, a New Testament, printed by the New York Bible Society. And so here's Eddie Rickenbacker. He sees planes that he never saw before, and he decides, I want to switch from driving as a chauffeur to a pilot. So he, during the war, learns how to fly. He ends up becoming an ace fighter pilot with the 94th Aero Pursuit Squadron with the famous hat in the ring insignia. And his squadron shoots down 69 enemy aircraft. He ends up getting, you know, the Medal of Honor from President Herbert Hoover. And one of the young guys that was in his team was Quentin Roosevelt, the son of Teddy Roosevelt, who was very courageous, shot down the enemy. But then, unfortunately, Quentin Roosevelt was shot down July 14th, 1918. And anyway, so he comes back to America. Now, he one time he talked about running out of gas, And he realized he was going the wrong direction, and he prayed, and he saw a river with a reflection of the moon, and he realized he was going the wrong way, and finally landed with like fumes, and he looks up in the sky, and he thanks God for sparing him. And he says, I want to make it clear that this escape and the others were not the result of any super ability or knowledge on my part. I wouldn't be alive today if I had to depend on that. I realized then, as I headed to France on one wing, that there had to be something more. And then he talks about that I believe that God spared me not because I am I, but because he's got something for me to do, and he has something for each of us to do. World War II, he sent out to the Pacific, and they're crashed in the ocean. He writes a book, Seven Came Through, but they're starving. One guy has a pocket New Testament. They read the pocket New Testament, and a seagull lands on his head, and they catch it, and they eat it, and then they're dehydrated, and there's a rain shower far away, and they pray, and the rain shower moves over their little dinghies and everything. But just a fascinating story of Eddie Rickenbacker.
Yeah, so many stories, and you've just put them together. Actually, Susie has, but she was looking or reading the American Minute. Very, very well done. Thank you so much, Bill, for being our guest.
Thank you.
Matthew, please tell our listeners how they can get our special offer, Miracles in American History, Volume 2. It is truly inspirational.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today are two great books by Susie and Bill Federer. At a time when they are tearing down statues and trying to rewrite history, it is great to have documentation of how miraculous our country really is. God really blessed America. The first book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 1. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 if you live in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And this book, as well as all of our materials, are available on our website at swrc.com. The second book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 2. This book is also for a gift of $22. Better yet, get both books, Volumes 1 and 2, for a gift of $40. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And they are available on our website at swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Here's an insightful contribution from our board member, Jerry Tyson.
The LGBT curriculum mandate is still on schedule to be implemented in the upcoming New Jersey 2020-21 school year. Sean Hyland with the Family Policy Alliance of New Jersey posted this information on June 4th. Quote, I want to share with you this dangerous agenda by exposing the lesson plans of Garden State Equality. They are using the power of government coercion to force radical sexual and political beliefs onto students. We believe public schools should be neutral in their presentation of religious beliefs, worldview, and political ideology. The lesson matrix for further development of final curriculum specifically targets 8-year-old children with LGBT-themed mournings, 9-year-old children with political sexual beliefs, and 11-year-old children with transgender literature reading assignments. It listed activities for 3rd and 4th graders, including 4th grade physical education lessons, including Dancing to be Free, LGBT Black Dancers of the 20th Century. 6th grade literature assignments include reading the biological information on Babs Sipperstein, the first transgender political activist in New Jersey. It specified that lessons must be structured to be intersectional. Intersectionality is a political theory that places value on being oppressed, the basis of identity politics. This lesson leverages historic injustices toward African Americans as a cover to claim victimhood and oppression by those who identify as gay, lesbian, transgender, or other. And three, the state-mandated LGBT curriculum law requires the teaching of contributions of LGBT-identifying individuals in middle school and above. Third and fourth grades are considered elementary levels. So here's the problem. Sexual propaganda is being pushed in elementary school. GSE has plans to meet and greet students with transgender activists or other LGBT speakers in classroom group meetings to push their agenda to younger, more vulnerable ages. GSE lesson developers believe our young children are nothing more than access points for Garden State Equality to promote their ethical and sexual belief systems. Problem two, studies show that 80 to 95% of children suffering from confusion about their gender identity that do not receive medical intervention outgrow these feelings by the time they reach adulthood. Yet 100% of children who receive medical intervention will have gender identity disorders persist into adulthood. Tragically, after sex reassignment surgery, people are 20 times more likely to die from suicide. GSE's curriculum teaches students it's good and healthy to ask themselves if their gender identity matches their biological sex, in spite of all medical evidence to the contrary. These non-educational meet-and-greets indoctrinate our children, forcing them to rethink their understanding of the biological differences of male and female. GSE's curriculum teaches the very real concepts of male and female are simply arbitrary and have no basis in anatomy or genetics, the exact opposite of the truth. In their eyes, the historic global and scientific view of human sexuality is ignorant and bigoted, and this is taught to our children. The worldview is that GSE's curriculum instructs students to adopt a postmodern worldview of human sexuality and gender identity. Postmodernists question the fundamental meaning of words like boy and girl. Don't think this will not affect your schools if you do not live in New Jersey. This is the overriding direction of today's government education system. Start in the lowest grades and firmly set a foundation. In Luke 17, 2 and 3, referring to those who would subvert children, Jesus said, "It is impossible but that offenses will come. But woe unto him through whom they come. It were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones."
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "When there is injustice anywhere, there is injustice everywhere." This is particularly true of the plight of women in East Turkestan, referred to as the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region by the Chinese Communist government. Uyghurs are forbidden from practicing their religion, which is Islam, and forbidden from speaking their mother tongue. They are prohibited from naming their children as they choose and discouraged from wearing clothing that marks them outwardly as Muslim. They often have their clothing forcibly cut by the authorities to resemble what is considered to be the more immodest Western style of dress. None of this abuse is surprising, given the professed atheism of China's communist government. Atheists have no authority above themselves. The man with a gun has the rule. Abuse should be no surprise.
Uyghur women who have escaped from the camps report being forced to take unknown medications, which altered their moods and stopped them from menstruating. Uyghur women are also forced into marriages with Han Chinese men, a part of China's strategy to force assimilation of the Uyghurs, colonize the region, and steal its resources while promoting the Belt and Road Initiative. There is no other way to view this other than as government-sponsored mass rape of an entire race of women, with the express purpose of breeding the Uyghur bloodline into oblivion.
Though the Chinese Communist Party claims that there is no God, that the Bible is a book of fairy tales and myths, yet the Bible clearly proves itself to be true by what it says about the evil of the human heart. Chinese literature, Chinese philosophy, Chinese culture, though some of the highest achievements of humanity, is completely powerless to change the human heart. Indeed, the heart of man can be extremely wicked. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, we read in Genesis 6:5, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And you know, Marvin, I think this is especially true of the Chinese Communist Party. By their wickedness, their evil, their intimidating lifestyle, they're verifying that the Word of God has got their name in it. They are wicked people.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today are two great books by Susie and Bill Federer. At a time when they are tearing down statues and trying to rewrite history, it is great to have documentation of how miraculous our country really is. God really blessed America. The first book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 1. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 if you live in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. And this book, as well as all of our materials, are available on our website at swrc.com. The second book is titled Miracles in American History, Volume 2. This book is also for a gift of $22. Better yet, get both books, Volumes 1 and 2, for a gift of $40. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And they are available on our website at swrc.com.
When we offer an item for $30, we do not get to keep $30. We have to purchase these items we offer, which cost us about half of that. Then we have to pay the radio stations to play our program. We know you can get these items we offer cheaper at someplace else. But the little money we do get to keep goes for purchasing new items, paying radio stations, wages, utility bills, computers, and all the rest that keeps this ministry on the air. So when you look for a cheaper price online, remember the great program you just heard and say to yourself, I'll support Southwest Radio Church because I enjoy their messages on Bible prophecy and Bible teaching.
Thank you for being with us. Join us tomorrow when Pastor Larry talks with Billy Crone about what makes America great. Here on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Ministries.